Welcome to Ladies with Gumption episode 196, Breaking Good. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. My name is Jessica. That was horrible snaps, but you know, you get the, there you go. My name is Jessica and I'm here with
May
and Tatiana.
We have been like MIA because like life is kicking our ass, collective asses. Recently, but we are slowly making our way back onto the socials. So if you want to follow along with us, I did the Stargirl live tweet yesterday. If you caught any of that, you can follow along with us on at DCTV Gumption on Twitter. You can send us your feedback to ladiesofthegumption@gmail.com, and I will get back around to posting them on Tumblr, where you can also send us at ladiesofthegumption.tumblr.com. If you are a Patreon, thank you so much for supporting the podcast. Your donations help us keep the podcast afloat. And to thank you, we give you extra content, including premium HBO Max shows like Doom Patrol and Peacemaker and Harley Quinn, which we have to finish the second half of the season for that one. Popular Netflix series. MCU series, a lot of, you know, Star Wars series, a lot of different content on there. And you can find that at www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption. In the news, not a lot that I remember, but one thing that we did get a new casting for The Flash, Richard Harmon has been cast as the new Captain Boomerang. And this looks like a younger, I feel like, who is the former Captain Boomerang? Was that like an older guy?
Like, I know, like, I don't, you know, remember.
Older looking than Richard Harmon, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? Yeah. Because I feel like the Boomerang in my head is like Suicide Squad Boomerang. Right. And right. That's not right. But I feel like, because Boomerang was on Arrow, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Anywho, this is the new Captain Boomerang. So, yay for him. And then also, like, The Flash started filming recently and Grant did his last first suit up of the season.
Oh, emotions.
Yes. Yeah. So any other news that you guys can remember?
Well, we saw that filming photos of Grant and Candace when she had the little gun or the really big gun.
Correct. Thing. So we know that the first episode of the season is probably going to be West Allen heavy, West Allen like working together. May got excited and I said, hold on.
I just think I did not get excited. I know that it's always West Allen heavy in the first episode and then it just kind of derails from there.
But hey, at least we'll keep that one tradition alive.
Yeah, here's crossing his finger, or you know, keep the bar, expectation bar low so then we can be pleasantly surprised. Or
prepare to be disappointed.
Yeah, even more disappointed than you could be. Anyways, so we're going to move right along into Stargirl, which is a bright spot for all DC TV viewers, I would assume, because it is such a great show. And they're supposed to be getting, and here's news, because they're supposed to be deciding on renewal of Stargirl like by the end of the month. So there's a possibility because, you know, things have been kind of trigger happy recently with shows that Stargirl may not get renewed. And I think it should be renewed. So it's like hashtag renew Stargirl. Make sure you're watching the episodes if you enjoy it. It's a really high quality produced show. So if you can, every view counts and hopefully it does get a fourth season, or they at least like, you know, move it back to HBO Max and host it there if CW doesn't want it, you know, so.
And watch on the app, too, because that's what I do. So that also counts towards...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, hopefully this podcast will inspire you to watch if you have not watched yet, and then we will have single-handedly saved Stargirl.
We're going to put that in our caption. Here's Lace Gumption, we save Stargirl. anyways, this format, we're going to go over the first four episodes of the season. We're going to give our joy, no joy, and we have some feedback from Sonia, I believe, and... I know Joe asked if we were doing Stargirl so she could send feedback, but I'm not sure if she did or not. But anyways, we'll read all the feedback, and then at the end, we'll crown a Lady of Gumption of the Week. So Tatiana's going to take it away.
Yes, we've got four episodes. under the subtitle Frenemies is the name of this season. And Side A is called Second Chances, with the first two episodes to dissect. So, Starman came back from the dead, thanks to the trusty staff, Cosmo. But now there is a subtle power struggle in the household about, you know, who Cosmo really belongs to. Who should take out Cosmo? Who is the real star person? Even though Starman, ex-Starman, if you will, Sylvester is very... very effusive in his praise for Courtney and suggesting that she is the one and only Star Girl, but then still also like making cases for Cosmo to put next to his bed, taking out the staff whenever it's not his turn, etc. Anyway, all the super villain, former super villain enemies are in town, vowing to reform. Courtney thinks there will be peace. No one else thinks there will be peace. Pat wants to lock his doors. Courtney doesn't want him to. When the gambler arrives to town, looking to make his own amends, wanting to find his daughter Becky, the team is then at odds over whether or not they can trust him. But then they don't have to be at odds anymore on that because he gets murdered. And now the question is, who murdered him? Who can we trust at all at this point? Was it Cindy? Because we definitely found her with a gun in her hand, standing over his dead body, saying that he did not, that she did not do it. Many questions. So then begins the investigation, looking at all the suspects. Tense run-ins with the Shade, who is very sassy for no reason, and then Sylvester tries to kick his ass. Courtney and Pat then realize that Sylvester needs to tone it down in order to be a good superhero sidekick now. Speaking of which, being with Sylvester makes Pat kind of backslide into his sidekick ways because he's got an alpha male in present, I guess. I don't know what the situation is. Meanwhile, Barbara and Paula become besties, not through Barbara's own will, but because she wants to help Paula get in the good graces of the town, make amends with Blue Valley, join one of whatever society. I don't remember.
Rotary Club.
Yes, there you go, which neither of them, like, understood the purpose of, but they're like, this is the way. So, Barbara helps Paula. Paula now loves Barbara. What brought joy from these episodes?
I get, like, season two was super, super dark with Eclipso. And so one thing that's brought me a lot of joy just right off the bat in season three is how much lighter it feels. So the tone is like really light. And I also like that there's a lot of fun tension, I guess, especially with the Crocs moving in next door. And I was like, hey, neighbor, and how they always kind of wind up like breaking into to the Whitmore house, like uninvited, offering juice. How much do they use, like, Pat's groceries, or do they bring their own groceries? Like, I don't know. Like, what?
Well, they are always shopping, so
they are always shopping. They need a lot of like juice
for groceries to bring to Pat.
Kale, yes, right. And like wheatgrass and all this other crap. So that is just like a lot of fun. I like that we get to see kind of like where everybody is at. I love the song choice. I love their song choices a lot. Coming to America for the premiere, and then like the gambler had like a really cool Motown kind of feel song in his trailer. So that was like really fun. I like that there is a lot of grayness in, you know, you've got like all of these villains like, I've reformed, I've changed. And then, you know, of course, Courtney is, you know, wants to see like the good in everybody. But then you have Yolanda and Rick on the other side. And then, you know, it's in their actions too. Like, I want to believe you, but you're still kind of shady. Your actions could be taken like another way. So I like that there's a lot of like room to play within, within everybody's like actions. I like the dynamic between Paula and Barbara. It kind of brings something new for the adults. I feel like everybody had something to do, especially in like the first episode. So that was really good. I liked the concept of the Gambler. I liked that we got the Gambler back because he's the only villain that didn't die or get thrown in jail or moved away. So he's like the last loose thread of the first season. So him coming back into play and wanting to, what do you call it? Have like a parlay or come in under like a peace treaty or something like that, because he's trying to do good for his daughter. And that seems like a very, you know, again, you're in this gray because it seems like a very credible thing that, you know, he wants to turn over a new leaf and do good, but then also, can you trust him? And I like Courtney's reasoning that how she felt moved because he wanted to do better for his daughter, because that's something that her dad disappointed her in. So she wanted to believe him, especially, you know, turning over a new leaf for his daughter, and how that could be a good thing. I like that the villains also don't believe the other, but like, I have changed. They have not changed, but I have changed. So I think that's really fun. I think in the second episode, the way that it's setting up for like a murder mystery plot, because we have like in the beginning, you have like the frenemies, everybody kind of adjusting, trying to be in the light, and there not being enough room for everybody to be in the light. So people keep trying to push other people out. But then also now there's really under the test, because you have someone that represented the old you, and now he's dead. And the only suspects of why he would be dead is you. So like the villain. So like how do you kind of like navigate that? I think there's a lot of really good setup in these first two episodes for the season. It started out really strong, and I think it has potential to really continue to be strong throughout. So I really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, same. I mean, pretty much it's a bright spot in DC TV right now in general. I feel like this show is underrated, at least because I don't like always hear about it necessarily. I know people probably watch, but I feel like more people should be watching. And what I like about it in general is that it's like, it's just a solid storyline, solid characters. It's not trying to be too Easter eggy and things like that. It's actually trying to tell like a good story. And I really like you said, the story of the season has been really great in setting up where it's going. It feels very Clue-like, you know, like Cindy with the gun in her hand standing over his body.
Get the
trailer park. Yeah, so it has just really good setup. And also, I like the fact that it's relying on things that have already been established in season one and two. They're not, you know, forgetting the fact that Cindy does seem to want to turn over a new leaf and be a good person and join the JSA. Like, she's trying really, really hard, and then the Crocs are trying really, really hard, and it's all...
It's hilarious that Artemis was, like, trying to audition for the JSA.
Yeah. And then our friends like, but look at our daughter. She'll make a great addition.
Like, our daughter's going to make your team, right? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and I like the adults that are also trying to, like, make friendships, and also it's a nice push-pull dynamic with, you know, in terms of, like, the way that Cindy sees everybody, or not Cindy, Courtney sees everybody and, like, wants to hope that they're going to be better people because they say that they're trying and they're putting in, you know, they're putting in, can't speak today, they're putting action to their words, and so... She's really hopeful and optimistic. And then Starman's like, I know these people. I fought these people. They're not going to change at all. And I really like that dynamic, especially as she sort of tries to accommodate him coming back and sharing the staff and all that good stuff. And kind of like having that interpersonal conflict with, you know, regards to how do you pass on your legacy to a new generation like Dr. Midnight did. And so, like, he did that, and he's like, I'm really happy with what I did. You know, Beth's the new Dr. Midnight. She's great. And Starman still doesn't really know what he wants to do. And I like that, because even though, you know, he's struggling a lot, I think it also shows, like, how adults also sometimes struggle to find their place and what they're going to do next and let go of the past and things like that, move on. So it's not just like a youth thing. So I really like that. And I just think it's really interesting how they've set up everything so far in terms of, you know, everyone having their little mini storylines. Paula and Barbara's friendship is fantastic. I really like that she's just sort of pushing herself into her life. And she's like, you can't ignore me. We're going to be friends. And I'm going to do this for you. And you're going to do this for me. And I really like the fact that, like, Barbara's like, yeah, that's fine. I will be kind to you and we will help you out. And the same goes with, like, Pat and how he treats the husband, whose name I can't remember. Yes, thank you. So that's all fun. And it's just, like, it makes just for interesting storylines and dynamics. And the whole idea of, can these people actually change and become better people and do good things versus, like, leaving their past behind is also an interesting concept. And I think that they have a really great setup in terms of what these people did do in the past and how they're actually showing that they are trying to be better people.
Also showing, like, why it's credible that people doubt their ability to change.
Exactly. It's not just like, oh, I see that you've changed it because you've made a lovely speech and we're all just going to be friends now. They actually have to, you know, through all every episode, they're actually putting in the work and showcasing that. I also love the fact that, like, Beth, you know, she spent so long trying to, like, get her parents' attention, and now they're, like, showering her with over-attention. She's just like, I don't know what to do with this.
There's a nice role reversal. And didn't they also, like, they sent her designs for her costume, which could be, like, her comic accurate costume. So that'll be fine. They get their way.
It will be. But I like the fact that, you know, they're still sort of in the story and their roles have been extremely reversed, and Beth is now like, oh my god, now I see how this goes. But also the fact that the way that they're reacting to her being a superhero is not the stereotype of, like, you have to be careful out there and we're not gonna let you do this because, you know, this is dangerous or whatever. So it's nice to see, like, a different reaction. So that's great. And then talk about the other characters in the other episodes, because they didn't really get that much to do in the first two, but solid stuff overall.
You're on mute, babe.
Yeah, I know. It wouldn't let me touch anything until I minimize the window. So anyway, I overall, yes, I very much enjoy the, like, much more lighthearted approach to even a murder mystery. I think in previously, it'll get emo because, you know, like, maybe the students are dying, or maybe everyone is, like, split apart or whatever in previous seasons. So I much prefer this take where it is, while an interesting character, like an adult from the past that was a villain, and thus it calls everyone's motivations into question, but doesn't break apart the main team than when we just got them back together after the drama of last season. So I like getting to see that whole, like, frenemies situation play out both for the kids and for the adults. Seeing Cindy trying to prove herself in the group while our man, Rick, and Yolanda push back. And of course you've got Courtney at the head trying to be the sweetest, most, like, pacifying person ever, and we see that also reflected in her parentals with Barbara and even Pat when he's trying to be hard, like when he's trying to, like, put a stop to things or, like, to draw a line. He does not succeed either because they're all just singles. Nice. Exactly. I also loved, like, the whole opening sequence with just, like, it's like the, like, eerie, like, everyone being so nice, or, like, even Cindy trying to be, like, like, rolling her eyes, but then, like, all right, let me help this lady cross the street or whatever. So, yeah, all of that, a lot of fun. And then the murder mystery, even though it flips it on its head right now, no one can trust each other, it's still in that same vein of, like, we are here to have a good time watching this. It does not feel, it does not feel stressful for me to watch them try to figure it out. Love the shade. Why is he so crazy? I don't understand. The tea. The tea, yes, exactly. Maria and the Earl Grey, the perfect cup of Earl Grey that took so long to achieve. That was really enjoyable. Overall, Let me see. I like also the dynamic between Kim and Starman and like pushing each other's buttons. May brought up the like, you know, sometimes even adults don't have it figured out or whatever. I was like, does this remind me that I am an adult and not have it figured out? Thank you, May. Starman and I are the same.
Oh no.
That's all right.
That's okay. You know, we're all on this journey in life.
Thank you. Exactly. Also, I do love the Croc family. It's so much fun to watch them like actively try to be good, but they don't know the first thing about it. And when they do the whole murder mystery, like replay the scene, like we get to see Larry have gone to the gambler's place and then like choose not to go in or whatever, put the bat down or whatever. So like we're actually seeing them make those choices to change while also knowing that someone somewhere did not, right? Because someone did the murder. We don't know who. And also really fun to see those different versions of events. Like when Shade's like, oh, this is what happened. And then Starman's like, no, I think this is what happened. And he comes in like, kill. So, yeah, all of that good. Also, like the little side story with Mike and Jakeem, where they're doing their little like detective attempts with magic. Like, tell me who it is. Has many names. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Very helpful. I also loved the whole Paula wanting Artemis to join the JSA and like trying to put in a good word for her daughter with like the coach or something. And
yeah, Paula,
like I'm actually not. This has nothing to do with me. Actually, I cannot make this decision. And what else? I loved how Beth has to now sort of like tone her parents down before she was the one that had to be toned down by her parents. So it's nice. It's nice to see her get some love. That's all, because other people are not as interesting as the people that I've mentioned. So, what did that spark, right?
This is a nitpick, really, because it's not that it doesn't spark joy, because it's, like, needed to keep the frenemies balanced, but I do think that, and it's also because we see stuff that Cindy is doing to be better that the other kids don't see, especially Rick and Yolanda. I like that Yolanda doesn't like Cindy and there's like this tension because like Courtney's my best friend. You're not trying to still like my best friend. Like that's not right. But also, you know, they're talking about how she's bad and she's never gonna change, but you know, you got like one person that has murdered somebody and you got like Rick who's trying to resurrect another murderer, Grundy. So like cut her a little slack, maybe, I don't know. But I mean, that's just like a nitpick. They're there for that, you know, role for a reason. And then Courtney has backup with her other sunshine twin and Beth, so it's fine. But what the big thing that is bothering me is Starman. And I just feel like there's, you know, a lot of like foreshadowing of like some, it could be very difficult. I feel like, you know, and especially in 3 and 4, you can tell that he's trying and that it's not something that he's doing on purpose, in terms of like taking Cosmo back when he said that he wouldn't do that, or, you know, him promising to be the mentor for Courtney, but also kind of like running off on his own. But it is a little concerning how easily he slips into just taking over, especially, and I think with the confrontation with the Shade, and his anger management is just like huge red flags, like all over the place. Like it's weird. It's like interesting because he is a hero, right? But the way that he acts sometimes, he is also a dick. And like his anger,
right?
His unwill, like he is Yolanda times Rick level of disbelief or not wanting to see the best in people, especially from former villains. You do get that there's a lot of trauma there with the League and having killed all of his members of JSA, so I get that. But and he's also been quote unquote dead or unalive for how many years, and a lot of things have changed. and it doesn't feel like he has changed yet. And so you get like a lot of this like conflict. And I was really, this is where I was, the Courtney's conversation with Sylvester after the Shade incident. She's so sweet and she's so nice. And she's just like too nice. Like I would have wanted her to put her foot down a little bit harder with Sylvester, but instead she offers to share the staff. So she's already has this kind of like fear that he will take it back as the rightful owner. And then this thing with Shade happens where Sylvester just like unilaterally makes a decision without her. And so like the conversation is then like, well, we can share, like let's compromise and share the staff, but she's still giving up part of the staff. And, you know, and then in, Sylvester keeps like proving, you know, repeating the same actions of kicking ass first and then questioning things later or afterwards when it's kind of too late. And then you also see that in his relationship, Pat is also too soft. So Pat is also a little bit at fault of wanting to relive in nostalgia with Sylvester, but I feel like it's just nostalgia because it was so long ago, but was it really, if this is the dynamic that they had, was it really that great?
Because, right, why are you trying to go back?
Right, like, why are you trying to go back to Sylvester, like, telling you what to do? Like, you're my sidekick. You need to do what I say. Or, like, the fact that they, when they went to talk to Shade, when he and Pat went to talk to the Shade, and Sylvester wouldn't even screw over in the booth to let Pat sit down. Like, Pat is a grown adult now. He's not a teen or however young he was when he was stripesy. So, like, he's causing a lot of, like, friction for me in terms of, you know, I'm team Pat and Courtney. Like, you know, they've been here this day one. Like, you just got here. You may have been here before, but I don't know that part. I know this part. So watching him kind of like struggle, not even struggle, he is very hard-headed in these first two episodes. I feel like in the second half, 3 and 4, he's starting to get it, but he's just got like a lot of missteps that make me wonder if there will be a point later on in the season where I could see him deciding to say, yes, I am taking my staff back and, you know, I'm taking my ball and leaving kind of thing. So I'm a little bit worried about that. It seems, you know, that in the second half of the episodes that we'll talk about in side B, that maybe that won't happen, but I still feel like it's there. Like the recipe is there for there to be a big blow up that will have this, you know, Cosmo having to choose between two parents. Like, do I go this way or this way? So I don't know.
Child of divorce. No, I completely agree about Starman. I feel like I really understand where he's coming from and his struggle, but at the same time I feel like he is also a representation of somebody from your past who makes you fall back into those certain bad habits even that you had before, even though you've grown and you've evolved and you've moved on. You like Pat's just be like, oh, Starman's here, so I guess I have to start acting like a certain confidence way.
He's like, Pat has a lot more confidence now, but with Sylvester being back, it's like he's sliding back into, mm-hmm. you know, the more submissive, not as confident Pat anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it also, like Starman being there now too, not only causes like some conflict with Courtney and sharing of the staff and her fearing that, you know, he might take it and go. I don't fully trust Sylvester quite yet to be like, okay, you can stay, you know, you're cool. But I also feel like his presence takes away a little bit too from the Pat and Courtney dynamic, because Pat's sort of like in the middle of, you know, being there for Starman and making sure his friend is like all good and trying to live his new life in Blue Valley. And being there for Courtney, who's also trying to make Starman feel comfortable and living his life, you know, moving on with his life in Blue Valley. So it's really hard to watch sometimes because you know that some screen time can go to them. But I feel like he just takes up a lot of screen time in terms of like his journey and where he's going and how he's involved in the plot and whatnot. So, like, the first two episodes, we don't really get a lot of Yolanda, for example, or, like, you know, Artemis, or, you know, anybody else, really, of the younger kids. So it's just, like, Starman takes up a lot of space. And I wish that they would just, like, scale it back just a bit, because I like his storyline. It's just that there's, like, a lot going on with him that, considering everyone else was there first, he's just kind of like the elephant in the room. And he's just sticking around. Again, I don't trust him. So I don't know where the storyline is going to go. And I feel like he can grow and change. But I want him to do it faster. And then, like, in terms of the other kids, like Rick and Solomon Grundy, I can't say that I really care. And I feel... Right. I feel a little bit bad.
This is the only storyline coming back.
Yeah, same. And it's kind of like a lot of the younger guys, like, are getting the short end of the stick this season. Like, 3, 4, we're starting to see a little bit more of, like, Yolanda's storyline and stuff like that. But I feel like Rick is just kind of there, and I forget about him a lot. So hopefully in future episodes we'll get more of everyone.
Yes, that was exactly what I was going to say. Like, my biggest issue with Starman is not so much that I don't trust him. Like, I do feel like I don't trust him, but I think that it's more just that he wasn't a great guy ever, and not that he's, like, particularly a bad guy, rather. So, like, that part is fine. But like y'all said, he takes up so much real estate in the story, and I understand why. But I also don't know if the show realizes it, because, like, they seem to be having a great time with it. So I don't know. We'll find out. But the other thing especially is, like, I just feel bad for Courtney, because, like, she's trying to be so nice about it, but she's also, like, genuinely concerned she's going to lose the staff. And so every time I'm like, no, it's okay, Courtney. Cosmo loves you too. Don't cry. So that part is, like, less fun. Like, it's fun to watch him with his antics and then, like, kind of, like, not necessarily know where he's going with it, or to watch Pat kind of, like, be a Dumbo with him. But it's not so fun for me to watch, you know, Courtney be sad about it. So we will see where that goes. But like you said, really, it's more that I'm like, okay, all Rick has gotten to do in two episodes is, like, mourn Grundy and, like, check his grave. And then, like, all, not that I, like, you know, I'm not, like, a Cameron stan, but, like, Cameron showed up one time to, like, not paint and brood. It's like, okay, thank you, Cameron. And, like, and Yolanda, you know, we got to have some of the fun frenemy dynamic with her and Cindy, and kind of, like, her being, like, the second in command and not necessarily agreeing with Courtney's ways, but there's still, like, so much to unpack from her family, or just from her processing last season, that she's not getting to do right now. So it is a very much, like, a little bit of, like, a, like, everyone has, like, one thing that they've done, but I feel like there could be a couple of more moments for everyone that they would get if Starman was not here. So I don't know.
Like, because Mike and Jakeem, they had kind of like a, that one scene, and they had, like, exactly, a scene, like, with the newspapers or whatever, but I'm like, how does this relate to the plot? Like, it just feels like it was a little bit there, and they didn't really go into depth with it in, like, those first two episodes.
Right. So yeah, it's like they have to, like, check in on everyone to be like, yes, they do exist, but they are not really building individual storylines with that. So we shall see where that goes. Yeah, so basically my main problem was just there's not enough of the non-Courtney children, and I want more. I want more of the non-Courtneys. Mostly Yolanda and Beth. I'm gonna be honest. Cameron and Rick could become one person, and I would not know the difference. So, anyway, do we want to read any feedback for this half, or do we want to get into?
I'll read Sonia's, because she did one for the premiere. Okay. She also sent, like, a lot of feedback on the Candace Open Up podcast episode that we did. But I'm going to skip that. I'm going to save it for Tumblr. So for Stargirl, she says, I love this episode because we got some great team moments and a great cliffhanger ending. And it's also really nice to see Cindy and Artemis trying to be part of the JSA what with Cindy helping an old lady with her groceries and Artemis just being a little bit too excited to join the team. It also mirrors Crusher and Paula being super excited to be friends with Pat and Barbara, like Crusher breaking into their house, and Paula being all, you will force your daughter to let my daughter join the JSA. And Barbara being like, okay, how about not? I also really like the team dynamics with Courtney and Beth being sunshine and rainbows and getting to the others to join the team and Rick and Yolanda being grumpy cats about it. This is why Hour Knight and Wildstar are the best couples hands down. Speaking of Rick, I like to see him try to bring Granny back and try to fix Hourglass. And he's got it about 30 minutes of strength instead of an hour. Oh, that was a plot point, you know, Rick fixing his Hourglass. So go right.
That we put
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remembered them saying there's only 34 minutes left or something, but I don't remember what happened after that. So good job, Rick, I guess. He did it.
Speaking of Beth, it's nice to see her parents putting in the same effort she put in during season one and her exasperation at their enthusiasm with the food and the costume and whatnot. It's so funny and cute to see her be frustrated and done with it. Like, how the tables have turned. It's also super interesting to see how Starman came back. Like, when Courtney first used the staff, it healed him and woke him up in his coffin and got out and went to find Pat. However, I did not like the whole, you're my sidekick again. Like, shut the fuck up, dude. He's so much better than you. But I did like him being so impressed with Stripe and saying how the old JSA would have him join the team in a heartbeat.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just said that was sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Glad that Barbara said what no one else was able to say when she got mad at Sylvester for saying he didn't want the staff back and wasn't going to take it, but still taking it because it really hurt Courtney's feelings. And I'm glad she had her back when Pat really didn't. Probably not even realizing it because he was so into helping that plane. Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that was a good, you know, mother-daughter united front. Can't wait to see what happens with the gambler and his daughter, and I love that Courtney was giving him the benefit of the doubt because she never had a dad who tried to find her, and it's just so sad and also that they didn't forget the trauma that Courtney went through with her bio dad now that she has Pat as a father figure. Really wants to know who the person was watching the gambler is, and also which we found out was Crusher in episode 2. And also, who is the person at the end of the episode who killed that guy? And wondering if they're the same person or connected in some way. That was her feedback.
Indeed. Indeed. I agree with all of it. I will say, I don't remember if it happened in the first episodes or the next episode, so this could just be floating in space. But when they were talking about, like Pat literally was explaining to Sylvester why Courtney has a fixation with Starman and why she was so impressed with him and like kind of like replaced her dad with him, right?
Yeah.
That scene that was really like it was very nice to hear it verbalized.
That was in episode 4.
Oh, okay. Well then, beginning my joys for episode 4. That is my first joy.
I can do her episode 2 as well since she also kind of like separated them out. It looks like.
Sure.
So episode 2, Sonia says, I like that this episode we basically had a murder mystery with everyone trying to figure out who killed the gambler. That scene with the shade and the tea was so cute. I loved it so much, especially how happy Maria was at finally making a good cup of tea. Hated Sylvester being so mean to the shade, but that scene where the shade was like, I'm more subtle than that. And then Sylvester was like, please, you wear a top hat, was hilarious. Sylvester training Courtney with the staff was great, and it was cool to see what the other can do. Love seeing Courtney thinking about her friends and family and the people that gave her joy. Oh, I like that scene too. I didn't know it was in episode 2, but the scene where he's teaching her how to use the staff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And superpower it. But did anyone else notice a pretty conspicuous lack of Mike in her flashbacks? LOL. Speaking of Mike, I love the Mike Jakeem scenes, especially when Jakeem tells Thunderbolt he never understands any of his references and the fact that his clue was the killer has many names. Like what? Saddest scene was Courtney reading the gambler's letter to his daughter and so desperately wishing that her own dad would care this much. Love the scene of Paula and Barbara. I think they're great and it adds a lot of humor into what is otherwise a pretty dark episode, but it's also funny how Paula is equally as bad as Barbara at baking and exactly why Pat does all the baking in the family because Barbara was like, I think we had too much of something. I laughed out loud. Cindy experimenting on herself and also the fact that she has gambler's laptop doesn't look so good for being innocent, but we'll see.
Yeah, I did love the baking stuff, especially because like when they set it up, it seemed like Barbara was gonna know because she's like, "You have to put time into it because it shows that you care." And then when Paula was like, "So do you?" She's like, "No." Like, oh,
baking
okay.
is hard, okay.
But anyway, all right. So, side B, murder talk. when things get real. Courtney and the JSA received an anonymous tip that could help in their murder investigation, which leads to them talking about the blackmail. The episode's called The Blackmail, and it was the Crocs who have been blackmailed by the gambler. But don't worry, they weren't the murderers so far, we think. They clear themselves. And Sylvester is told by Yolanda to find balance. Going to school, for example, something that none of them ever do. Or going to work. So he is going to find a job, maybe. And also try to figure out who he is without his Starman identity. However, he ends up investigating, and gets himself knocked out, which adds another piece to the murder puzzle, since they think that it was Dragon King, that only Dragon King would be strong enough to have done, like, destroyed the trailer, apartment, whatever, and attack Sylvester, which does not put Cindy in a good light, except that then Courtney is like, Cindy would not go back to her dad because he was an abusive control freak, and she's finally free of him. So I think that shows that she is innocent. Check. What else? Beth? Yeah, I just said that. Courtney reaches out to Cameron. He does a little ice palace for her after attacking her with the ice. And she's like, it's okay. I, a totally normal girl, love your ice powers. And I will be here to support you as the totally normal love interest that I am.
Because so, snowflakes.
Yes. So what sparked joy in these two episodes?
Oh, man. I like that we're getting more of Yolanda's story, because I feel like the first two episodes did not do her justice. And then now we're getting the fact that she's working late because her mom allows her to, because her dad lost his job and they're selling their house and she hasn't told anybody about it. So I was like, oh my God, what's going on with Yolanda? And there's still like some, you can sense the tension still between her and her mom. So I'm looking forward to how that's going to play out with, you know, Yolanda being on the team, potentially moving away. Like, how is that going to affect the JSA and her friendship with Courtney? So that was a really, like, I'm glad that we're moving that story along, because I feel like Yolanda deserves that screen time. Again, with like all of the character dynamics, I love that Paula threatened basically Tim, Barbara's boss. It's like, you're going to be a little bit nicer to Barbara because you should, or I'll probably beat you up. And then him being like over enthusiastic the next day at the meeting for her housing project or town project that she's doing. So I love those little things that just maintain that strange friendship that's going on there. And also just like Crusher being a part of Sylvester and Pat's group too. Just like, yeah, I heard you got hurt, so I feel like I'd be a good neighbor if I just brought you beer and we could just hang out and watch a movie. And just seeing how like they continue to butt heads, but also that they both think each other is crazy. Courtney finally, you know, wanting to, or like having a plan and putting her foot down in terms of like Cindy, because I feel like she realized the tension was growing with her and the JSA, and it's like, oh, where's Cindy, like, and she knows information about the gambler that we might not know, but she's like, if you ever go behind our backs and tell, you know, Sylvester anything again or anybody without telling us first, then you're just off the team. And I really like that, because it showed her leadership skills and also kind of put everybody else at ease in terms of their distrust of Cindy and knowing that Courtney had their backs in terms of like she just can't let Cindy do whatever she wants without her knowing about it. So I really like that, and just the evolution of Cindy, like we can really see her struggle these last three episodes, and then having that mystery of like, what is she turning into Dragon King? Is that why they found like the little scale at the crime scene or whatever? So all of that was really interesting. I don't think she did it, but it's really fascinating to see like her journey and like her struggle to be a good person and also trying to resist sort of literally becoming her father. So all of that was really interesting, and I think does a good job setting up what's to come in the future. What else? just loving all the character dynamics still. I feel like they're really strong. I feel like in terms of Mike's storyline with Jakeem, I still feel like he feels left out of the superhero that is superhero world that is his family, basically. And so he tries to utilize Jakeem's own powers with trying to, like, get ahead of the mystery so that he can help and be useful, which is really sad, but also really good in general for his storyline in the future. What else? Just, like, Starman finally coming to certain realizations, especially, like, his little talk with Dr. Midnight about, you know, putting down roots and kind of, like, passing the torch to the next generation and how important that is. And, like, if Dr. Midnight can basically have a life after he's, you know, been in the Shadowlands for a long time, then Starman can also try to have a life outside of being Starman. So those were great conversations, and I feel like the murder plot is getting really interesting, and the character dynamics are just growing stronger and stronger. Cameron, I still don't care about that much.
Don't stress yourself. Don't
know. But I did like the fact that, like, he is torn about his powers. Like, he's confused about them, but also still thinks that his dad was a good dude. And I'm looking forward to, like, how that's going to play out, because it's clearly going to cause tension between him and Courtney.
I loved episode 3. So first let me start with Cindy, because I really love what they're doing with Cindy, and I love that it's very gray. Again, like, she keeps getting caught in situations, like being caught scene of the crime with the gun, the stolen laptop, she has it, you know, there's a scale at the scene that is related to Dragon King, like, goes back to Dragon King. So there's all these kind of things. It's like, if she were playing them, these are incriminating factors. But you could also look at it is that she's trying to be good. She doesn't know how to be good, so she is, like, jumping ahead. But you can also look at it in the other way, that she is trying to be good, doesn't know how to be good, so she keeps, like, jumping to these conclusions, thinking that, similar to Mike in a sense, like, she's trying to, like, get ahead of the team to prove that she's an asset. But the things that she is doing to do that are duplicitous. And so it's like, I believe you, baby, but you look really shady right now, which I think is great. I love that. And then also with Sylvester and his conversation with Yolanda about trying to find balance, you know, getting that advice from a teenager is funny, but it kind of shows at least that he's trying. He's a little bit of a prima donna. Like, he's very spoiled. Like, when Pat was trying to tell him to find a job, he's just like, this is a really country backward ass town, and I don't like it here. But I did find it was, like, an interesting parallel of him having to find things to be establish his identity outside of Starman. And you kind of see the same patterns Courtney's falling into, where, you know, first thing 7 a.m. in the morning at the breakfast table, she wants to talk murder talk and what's next for the DSA and how, you know. So I can kind of see how they're kind of similar in that aspect, and maybe part of this season is about her reestablishing her balance as well. I love her as a leader. I think she's a very empathetic person, so I feel like she gets all of the how to handle all of the different personalities within her team, because there's a lot of, like, combative personalities, especially between Rick, Yolanda, and Cindy, of who deserves to be here and who doesn't deserve to be here. So I thought all of, like, how she handles all of the different personalities on her team is really, really good. Sorry. And I enjoy seeing that from her. Even though, you know, I think in this episode, the episode 3 is where, oh, I also like that Cindy went to Sylvester. That was another thing that she did that was, like, duplicitous. Because she could say that she sent the blackmail specifically on the Crocs, because it's like throwing the Crocs under the bus to escape her guiltiness. Or maybe she really did think it was the Crocs, and she's like, here's the suspects, go get them, Sylvester. So I thought that, and then when he goes to find them at the grocery store, I think it's like hilarious how they were like shopping in the grocery store, first of all. But even though I don't like how angry he got and what brought it to that point to have the fight in the grocery store, I think the fight was such a cool, well choreographed fight scene, really beautiful. Like one of my favorite scenes in that episode. Yeah, so that was a huge spark of joy for the choreography and visual effects department. And then what else did I like? I'm going to talk about that in the dislike. So I'm going to talk about it later. But I also like when Sylvester is caught in the hospital and they bring in Dr. McNider, and they kind of have a JSA member to JSA member conversation about moving on and passing on a legacy, and you know how Dr. McNider was like, yeah, I let that go. Give it to Beth. She's doing great. She's having a great time. And how that contrast with Sylvester having like a hard time letting go of it, and how that conversation between them cuts to their proteges, Beth and Courtney, at the trailer when the team's like looking. The whole team is there, but the shot goes from Dr. Midnight Starman to Dr. Midnight Stargirl, which I thought was a really cool transition. I'm glad that Cameron is finally moving somewhere.
So hard for you to compliment Cameron.
It's so hard. I did scream when they kissed, though. So, I mean, I don't know where it's going to go from there, but it was a moment for shippers, I guess. So,
Did you scream like a squeal or like a...
It's happening!
Okay. So good. So if they got even you to do that, that's good.
Yeah, it's not like a scream of delight, but you know,
it's a scream of anguish.
Oh my God, it's happening. I guess going back to the Crocs, I also liked how they were talking about how they could, like, after the fight with Sylvester, they were talking about how we were so tempted and we could have done bad, but you see, I turned around, I didn't go to his house, I didn't confront him, and they're kind of really proving their innocence. And then, you know, the continuation of Barbara and Paula's friendship with, you know, Paula threatening Tim, and then Barbara supporting her at the Rotary Club. That was really, really great. I like their dynamic together.
As did I. Okay. Hello?
Yep.
Okay, sorry. I thought there was talking because I heard the feedback. Anyway, I agree with all of this, basically, pretty much all of it. But let's just start with Barbara and Paula because they are amazing. absolutely loved Paula confronting Tim. And then bringing the taxidermy creature, whatever that was, to Barbara, and Barbara being like, I love it. Wow. Thank you so much. And Paula was like, yes, I knew it. So anyway, I hope they are best friends forever, but I very much like getting to see how Paula and Larry really are trying to turn over a new leaf. And I just hope that we get, like, not just more of that, but also, like, dynamic with Artemis and Artemis doing the same thing throughout the season. So, aside from adults becoming friends, which, yes, also love getting to see the elder JSA reflecting back on their days and how the baton has been passed or the torch has been passed or whatever you want to call it, all of that is really interesting, and I hope that that is also leaning in the direction of Starman Sylvester's storyline kind of like phasing to the background, you know, being where he belongs in the adult sphere for the remainder of the season. I really do like getting to see the like continuing the murder mystery in a way that raises questions. It doesn't really absolve a lot of the characters as quickly as you would think, but it still remains like an interesting storyline with a lot of like tension that doesn't feel like it's like it's enjoyable to watch and guess, but it does not feel like some kind of like horror slasher situation where you don't know what's coming next. So it still maintains the vibe that I would want Stargirl to have. Also really love getting to see Cindy go through all those, you know, taking all these different steps, try to get in the good graces of the group on her own, or try to prove her innocence on her own, but also kind of like, if you want to call it backsliding or whatever, like we see that she's still not doing what, like behaving the way that she should if she really wants to earn the trust of the rest of the group.
I really quickly.
Yeah.
One thing that I also had to add to my list of is she or isn't she the murder suspect, but like the fact that they found her like the scale DNA mm-hmm. at the scene, and then at the end of the episode we see her, you know, again like experimenting on herself and her arms full of scales, that still doesn't necessarily mean that she's not couldn't be the killer, because she could, like that Dragon King scale could be her scale. So is it
right
like hers because she killed him, or is it hers because she dropped it at the scene? Does she know if she is behind it? Does she know, like, is Dragon King really back, or is it Cindy being corrupted by whatever's happening to her? So there's like a lot of, you know, you go either way with it. So I just think that's like right. a really fun way to tell that story.
Agreed. I think they've done a much better job than I would have expected with the, like, putting, like, laying out the cards, if you will, before we actually reveal what the whole hand is going to be. I don't know. Metaphors. But they're doing a good job with
that. I liked it. It was good.
Thank you. Also loved the fight at the pit stop. There was very, I think it's called the pit stop. But yeah, it reminds me of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, when, in, like, the pilot, I don't know if you guys watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but Andy Samberg is, like, fighting, you know, trying to catch the murderer, and there's, like, just, like, old lady just, like, with her shopping cart, and he's like, how are you still here? But anyway, that is how I feel about the Crocs, and that scene. Also, I will say, I did think that the Courtney and Cameron moment was cute, like, when he, you know, like, makes it snow or whatever. She's like, you can control it. I believe in you. And then they had their cute little moment. That was very adorable to me. And if they were like that all the time, then I would have no issue. I would love them. But since they only get to do that once a season, we'll see what happens from here on out. What did not spark joy?
Can I say Starman again? No, I mean, I feel so bad because I do like him in general, but I feel like after his whole accident and conversation with Dr. Midnight, and, you know, seeing that he jumps into action without thought, that he would have just decided that Courtney should be Stargirl all the time, like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that he should just pass on the staff instead of sharing it. So I feel like he's not fully there yet, and I want him to be because I want the other characters to, like, get more attention. And they're starting to, which is really good. And I guess, like, my biggest thing is not even a dislike. It's just I don't want Cindy to be the killer.
I think she is, but I like that it looks
like know.
She is.
Yeah. She's come such a long way, and I feel like I just don't want her to go down that route, but I have many theories about it. That's all.
It's a short list.
Yeah.
You can share the theory if you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I feel like they're going to go a route where she transforms into Dragon King and kind of, like, goes berserk and doesn't remember doing any of it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. So that's where I think it's going to go. And then it'll be really interesting because that puts the whole being morally gray right in the, literally in the middle, because she's both trying to be good and doing bad things at the same time. So I feel like that would be really challenging for the JSA to kind of sort out.
Because, especially since half of them don't want her there anyway.
Right. <Yeah. laughs>
So I'm interested to see where that goes.
I can't believe you had a whole episode of Cameron to bash and you did not. No, I
completely forgot about Cameron. Thank you for reminding me he existed. Cameron. Yes, Cameron is just like in general, I feel like the... Well, I had expected the whole episode to just be about him, and I was happy it wasn't. Same. But at the same time, I still feel like there was too much time spent on him. And I feel like, you know, with his grandparents, they're just like lurking around and saying these like mean things sometimes. But I feel like they're very cartoony in their villainy. And I don't feel like they've really taught him anything either in terms of like how to control his powers. It's just like, you will be able to. We just have not shown you how to do it. So I just feel like he constantly walks around with like this sorrowful look on his face. And like, I'm so sad all the time. I'm so confused. But also like, I don't find him very compelling to care about his woes or the fact that he actually think that his dad was like a good dude. With any other character, that would be very interesting. But I just feel like there's just something missing with him. And maybe it's because his only connection really is with Courtney and not with, like, he's not really a part of any other major plot. And so I feel like when they get to the point where he does find out that Courtney is responsible for his dad's death, it's going to be, like, a weird subplot. I would just have rather him, you know, have gone somewhere to, like, cope with his dad's death outside of Blue Valley. Yeah.
You know, continuing on the Cameron hate train. I also thought it was just, I too thought it was going to be like a fully Cameron focused episode. I'm like, why do I have to come back to live tweeting on this episode? Like, why? So luckily it was not, but I do agree. It felt like the little bit that we got in the first two episodes and now, or the first, I guess, three episodes now into the fourth one, it just didn't seem like he's doing anything or that his grandparents are doing anything. Like, if they're gonna train him, they should just like train him, you know, and be specific about it and show him doing something. I thought it was, he had like a pissy attitude in the beginning of four and was like upset with Courtney for like no reason, and upset with a lot of people for no reason. Like, he's got cold spurts and he can't draw, and so now he's just like mad at everybody, and it's just like, I don't have time for you, like, you're not on high, really high on my list. There's that scene where he had like a lot of weird tension with Rick, which I also thought Rick was acting really weird about that, because I don't feel like we had any kind of scene where they established a rivalry or dislike of each other. Like, they're barely on each other's radar, but now they're like all up in each other's face, and Rick is like, don't say that about my favorite teacher ever again. If you do, I'm going to make you pay. It was just so weird.
I was literally like, is that Rick's his really, mom? Like, what's
Rick's
happening?
Really into art class, I guess. I don't know.
Like, what brought this on? It's just, I don't know. And then, like, when Courtney, you know, I thought Courtney should have acted a little bit more surprised that he had powers, but whatever. Then she's, like, trying to, like, coach him on how to manifest his snow powers and make him like stronger or more in control. I'm like, you know, I understand that Courtney, like, you think he can do some for good, but I've like, roll back, hold on, wait a minute, you know, I don't know if this is gonna be a good thing later or not. But yeah, he is there, I guess. And then one thing I meant to say in my likes was I liked that when they were at the hospital, it was Beth's mom was Sylvester's doctor. So it was kind of bringing in Beth's parents, not just annoying her, but also like bringing them into the larger superhero family. And, you know, that she's kind of getting to see, because, you know, like how you were saying that, May, that they were all very pro superheroing to Beth and super excited about it. And it's not something you usually see. Well, now she's getting to see like the other side of, oh, wait, people actually do get hurt here. So, you know, and kind of like adjusting her expectations. But then also kind of like speaking of Beth, that's what came up to my mind. But I just feel like we've seen a couple of scenes in the first couple episodes of Beth and Rick. They're usually paired together. When he was fixing his Our Man Hourglass, she was with him helping him with that. When she was like when her parents were trying to get the lowdown on what's new on the JSA team and bothering her in her headphones or her goggles, when she turned them off, it was because she was driving in the car with Rick. So obviously they do stuff together and it is cute. And you know that we want to see more of them together. But just putting them together in scenes is not enough. Like, where is the story? Like,
if Cameron and Courtney can get a whole snowflake, snowy romantic scene, right, then I don't see why this can't happen for Beth.
Yeah, like if you want to give Rick something and have Beth help him with it and have that be a storyline or something. I'm just tired of seeing them just like sitting next to each other and then them expecting us to be like, okay, that's enough. Like, it's not enough. Like, do something with it. And I feel like the same with some of the other stories of the other kids, like Mike and Jakeem, we get another scene of them in this back half of episodes of, you know, Mike really wanting to get ahead of the team and force Jakeem to be a superhero and help him. But it just seems like very one-off scenes that don't really connect to the larger story or, you know, have them interacting with characters other than each other. So, you know, I really would want more of Jakeem, more of Thunderbolt, more of Mike and Jakeem in their own story, which hopefully we'll get in upcoming episodes. But it just feels like they're kind of drip feeding certain storylines. And then, you know, like you guys alluded to earlier, spending a whole lot of time on Starman in particular in his quest to find a job and purpose to his life.
Purpose. It's that little flame. Lights a fire under your ass. Okay. Anyway. Yes, I agree. Still too much Starman. Yes. Cameron, since I did like the cute moment with Courtney, I will forgive him. But I don't know what it is. I don't know if, like, maybe just the actor was not meant to do brooding, but all they're giving him is brooding. Or if it's just boring. But, like, when you're seeing him do the brood and, like, be angry and, like, whatever else, I'm just like, can you stop? No, what? Like, I am not at all interested in this. And it's just not convincing to me. And then it was doubly the case in the classroom scene that you brought up. That was just, like, bordering on parody because I did not understand what was happening, why they were so mad. Rick was basically like, I'm going to kill you if you do this.
I looked down for a second. I legit thought Courtney was in the room, and that's who Rick was was defending.
The fact that he was, I was like, wait, what? Like, really mean to him last season, and then they had like an understanding at one point, and now it's like, I will die for you, Mrs. Whoever.
It was so strange.
And he's just like so blatantly threatening another student in front of her. She's like, please don't.
There's everything about that scene was off. Like, I don't know, like, directing, like, I don't know what went wrong there, but just overall not necessary and very weird. But speaking of Rick, it's four episodes in and he still doesn't really get that much to do. Like you were saying, I totally am here for a Rick and Beth partnership relationship to get to see that blossom. But instead, it's feeling very like Mary and Luke from Batwoman, where they're like, yeah, no, don't worry, we've got a plan. There's something long term, but then there was no term. There was no length. Now the show's over. We have gone nowhere. So I hope that does not happen with Beth and Rick, because I would like to see it. Would like it to happen with my eyeballs watching it. So that whole stuff, not necessary. I already said this in the previous one, but still, like, Pat still giving too much psychic energy in his, you know, behavior with Sylvester in that storyline. I would much rather see family dynamics. Whether it's Pat with Barbara, Pat with Mike, his actual child that we have never, like, we do not see them interact at all. I don't know what Mike has done other than hang out with Jakeem every once in a while. And obviously, what was once the central relationship of the show, Pat and Courtney, saying, like, he was so long ago. But anyway, and so I definitely for a second was like, did Sylvester die? And then I was like, oh, okay, in that case I forgive that we spent so much time on him. And then he didn't die. So that didn't happen, and I was disappointed. Although, not that I wanted him to die, but that would have upped the stakes a little bit. I'm just saying. So anyway, he didn't die. He did take up more time the next episode, so thanks for that. Yeah, the end. More feedback?
Well, I want to add that this is sparks joy because it makes me laugh every single time. The excuses that they come up with to cover up the villainy going on in Blue Valley. It's like a tornado landed in that area in Vex's trailer, or like it was a hit and run that didn't, you know, that put Starman in the hospital. I'm like, what? Who would believe?
Didn't Courtney say like she fell and that was her?
Or she hit a tree or something.
Yeah.
So many funny excuses. And you're like, who's buying this though?
Like, did you not see the giant robot flying through the sky? Like, that's something you can't hide. Okay. So Sonia says in episode 3, the scene where Sylvester is walking down the street with everyone being so nice to him was so funny, especially when it ended with him hating the coffee and spitting it out. Also great to see the callback to The Shade with Maria saying, I'm told we have the best tea in America. That was nice. Sylvester is such a dick. Oh my God. With him being sarcastic to Yolanda about his food. Please don't be passive aggressive to your servers. And then with them being a douche to Cindy when, oh yeah, he was an asshole to her. Like, that was like unnecessarily harsh. Being a douche to Cindy when he just played right into her trap. Yeah, he was an asshole and then he did it anyway. That was just, yeah. Cameron being so mean to that teacher who, if I remember, is the one that was, yes, the one that was helping Rick in season 1 and basically, and was basically harassed by his uncle. So it was nice to see Rick defending her, but boy, it took far. But boy, took it too far. Pretty smart of Cameron to use the icicle to puncture Rick's tire because it would melt before Rick saw it. Like if Cameron had frozen the car, they would have realized about his powers and that he's Icicle Junior. I don't think Cameron put that together, but it is, you know, it was nice thinking on his part. Speaking of Rick, I can't not bring up the hour night crumbs we got with Beth and Rick driving and investigating together, because just like I was always snacking on Hamel Fox crumbs, and now, please don't let them be another Hamel Fox, please. Please turn the crumbs into a cookie. Sonny says, I guess I'm always snacking on hour night crumbs too. The fact that Cindy can send messages to the goggles without them realizing it's Cindy or that it's coming from the gambler's laptop is crazy. The fight choreo in the grocery store is so well done, even if it was like, what the fuck, Sylvester, the entire time. Also hated that Sylvester was so mean to Pat and still thinks of him as a sidekick, and I'm glad Pat put him in his place and talked to him about how the kids, especially Courtney, look up to him. Love Barbara showing up for Paula's speech to the Rotary Club and Paula threatening Barbara's new douchebag boss. The cameras being underground. Oh, that's right. That is one mystery that they are teasing out. The cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And the growling, I think the Dragon King is back. So it could actually be the actual Dragon King. Which Sonya thinks is confirmed by episode 4 and the scale at the scene. And then in episode 4, the scene with the snow globe was super creepy. Like, it's not enough that he made a figurine of Courtney and put it into one of his snow globes, but then he froze it. Like, boy, get therapy. Also, I cannot mention Cameron taking the teacup from his grandmother and being like, it's hot. Like, boy, have you never had tea before? Like, what? The scene with Cameron's powers coming out and him being so worried he hurt Courtney and her helping him to control his powers and that adorable kiss at the end was so lovely. Like, am I shipping them? Okay, enough fangirling. I love the scene of Barbara's new manager being overly nice to her, as it was hilarious, and Paula being overly casual when asking him was funny too. I think their friendship is the best part of the frenemies aspects of the show. Another funny scene was when the kids were all investigating at the gambler's trailer and they made some comment about Cindy probably did it, and she was like, please, if it was me, Sylvester would be dead. And it's like, girl, yes. As comforting as you think it is. Like seeing Dr. McNighter again and him praising how good Beth is at being Dr. Midnight is great, and I love how they brought back the fact that his wife was pregnant when he quote-unquote died and that he is back with his wife and his son. Pressuring out Pat and Sylvester was hilarious, as was the fact that he shotgunned that beer and then was doing one-arm push-ups to work off the carbs. The unidentified skin cell Beth found and them thinking it's a Dragon King and me believing it since he can probably regenerate or something, which explains how he would still be alive after Cindy killed him. But now seeing it's probably Cindy, oh my God. I hope Mike and Jakeem don't end up investigating the tunnels, because if they run into Cindy, that could be bad. All in all, these episodes have been really great so far. Can't wait for the next one. And then she wants to know if we're going to be doing episode by episode or a combo like today. So What are your thoughts?
Excellent question, my friend. I don't know. I think we'd at least do every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There you go, Sonia. I think we got like a, wait, let me check Tumblr because I swear we got like a ask. Anonymous person says, LOL, I swear Simi didn't do this, even though the show is trying its best, convinces that she did. Her being the killer, if that man is really gone to begin with, would be too obvious, even if she wasn't trying to turn over a new leaf.
Agreed. I agree that it's too obvious, so it can't be her. It's gotta be someone super surprising.
My leading into predictions, until they found the Dragon King skill, I was like, clearly it's, you know, Nazi grandma and grandpa, like Cameron's grandparents. Because they're the only, I don't know that they know that the grandparents have powers. So right. I guess, like, once the icicle was gone, they figure there was no more ice-powered people. But they're still lurking. They're the only, like, loose thread that has not been, like, connected back to the team.
That's true. And they did see Starman in the diner, and we're like, what is he doing back here? And then he gets thrown into the air or whatever.
So they're still a suspect in my eyes. But now with, like, Dragon King pieces physically being at the scene, obviously that opens up the net a little bit more. And I agree. I don't think it's Cindy. I think it's great that it looks like it's Cindy, but ultimately I don't think it's going to be her.
Right. It wouldn't be great if it was Cindy because it looks like it's her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's got to be a misdirect. Very
Any
cool.
other predictions?
I got nothing else. But
There's also Grundy, because even though, like, Rick is, like, resurrecting wrong, doesn't mean that, you know, like, when is the last time you checked that pile of dirt, you know?
True.
And Sylvester went far up in the air, Grundy can do that too, so probably not, but still, that he's not completely out of the suspect list either, so.
That's true. I guess Grundy would also be just, like, a possibility, and then the question would be, like, what do you do with Grundy now?
Right, if he came back without his senses or something, I don't know, if he, like, reverted when he resurrected or something like that.
That would be interesting, because
it would give Rick a hell of a lot more to do.
Yeah, for sure, and then it would also kind of play into the whole morally ambiguous / resurrection thing going on with Starman and everyone, all the old villains turning a new leaf.
Yeah.
So good stuff, Stargirl. I applaud you.
Watch the show, people. Speak to season 4.
Do it. So, Lady of Gumption?
For the first 4?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put my vote behind Cindy.
Ooh.
Because I think she's doing... I do believe that she's trying to be a better person, but I also believe that it's very hard to break good when you're so used to doing bad. But she's very proactive in trying, and I feel like she's sincere, even though her attempts don't always land very well. And like, she's trying to be a hero through villainous means. Like, she's still using the villain playbook to try and be the hero, she's trying. So I have to give her credit for that.
Okay, that's a good one. I was going to say Paula.
I was going to say Paula. Oh, my God. But I would also, you could convince you with Cindy. So, I mean, obviously she's, like, the more, like, important to the plot choice.
What's your deal with Paula?
Paula is also trying, and she's still being accused, like, both her and her husband are constantly being accused of potentially killing the gambler or doing this or that, or, you know, but no matter what, they hold their ground, and even after being attacked by Starman, they're trying to befriend him too and be like, look, we come in peace. She's trying really hard to also, like,
that's a lot of them.
She's trying also really hard to befriend Barbara and, like, just be part of the community. I feel like she's working overtime and putting in a lot of effort to be a good person. There's like a lot of genuine love there for her daughter and trying to be better as well. But nice. Yes, she's trying harder than Storm Man, you know, to blend in. But yes,
I support it. I support it.
What's the verdict, Tati?
I support both. Why are we pitting women against women? We should.
Everybody gets a gold star.
I mean, I will say I see the point about Cindy because she is a bigger part of the plot and she's trying.
More targets against
yes, her. Like, she does.
A lot more to she prove. Does.
I would give, here we go. I would say part one can be Paula and part two can be Cindy.
There's an overall.
Right. Oh my God. Cindy and honorable mention will be Paula. Okay. Oh my God.
There you go.
Okay. So, have we completed all our tasks?
We have.
Feedback? Yeah. Okay.
We read the feedback.
We read it. We're good. Thank you all for coming. Join us every other week for more Stargirl. And soon we will certainly discuss Harley Quinn on our...
And Paper Girls, if you finished.
I shall start it.
Yes, exactly. I will start.
You only have one season, because they wouldn't give it a
second
one.
That's true, that's true.
We need to talk about that on the Patreon for Paper Girls. So if you are upset, please join us.
Yes, yes. Come and dissect why streaming is dying. So, anyway... so come back and see us soon. Send us messages. ladieswgumption@gmail.com. DCTVGumption on Twitter. ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. Farewell.
Bye.